Good evening, and you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you are keeping well and have been out and about enjoying this interesting summer weather we have been having of late. Well, we've got a lovely show lined up for you this evening. And to start off, we are joined by Mary Reynolds, better known perhaps as Wild Mary. Mary, you're very welcome to the programme.
Am I better known as that? I never knew that. That's hilarious. Anyway, thanks for having me, Ashley.
So, Mary, you are, well, I suppose in Ireland, one of the experts when it comes to managing your garden, but doing it in a more environmentally friendly way, or maintaining it in a way that we're working with nature as opposed to against it. And I'm really curious as to how you got into the work that you're doing now, because I know traditional gardening education would be about, you know, having the lawns all lovely and mowed and having everything looking really neat and pretty, maybe the traditional garden, a typical Irish garden. So I'm really interested in how you went a little bit atypical on it.
Thanks, Ashley. Well, I guess it's been a slow process. So I started off as a garden designer and kind of decided that I wanted to do wild gardens, but nobody would let me do one. So I decided to showcase that concept at the Chelsea Flower Show in London, and I did that. And then I ended up working all over the world as a garden designer. And then I started writing myself out of a job. And I wrote my first book, which was called The Garden Awakening. And then that kind of put an end to things, really. And I had to try and reimagine the way I worked. And then one morning I was sitting at my desk looking down over my garden, and I saw a fox run past, and this winter, and it was daytime. And it's not unusual, but I saw a couple of hares chasing the fox, which was pretty unusual.
Not supposed to be the other way around.
Yeah. And then I kept watching, and eventually I saw a little hedgehog scuttling along the line of the hedge in the same direction. So it looked kind of reminded me of Noah's Ark, that story when I was a kid. And so I went out to see what they were running from, basically. And they were running into a wild section of the land I was minding. It was covered in brambles and stuff. So they were safe in there. So I walked up my lane. I live in Wexford, and I was renting a house at that point in a rural part of Wexford. And across the road on the other side was this really beautiful thicket of a field where you couldn't get in. It was impenetrable. It was full of bracken and blackthorn and hawthorn and gorse and brambles and lots of other things. And somebody had got planning permission at the top of the field, and they'd gone in with a digger to clear it out to make a garden without any thought for all of our shared kin who called it home. And it kind of broke my heart. And I went in and I sat and I thought about, where are these creatures supposed to go? I was upset because I had done the same thing myself so many times. And I was thinking about how they can't really go out into agricultural land because, you know, the hedgerows are very, very managed or removed. And there's so many chemicals being sprayed that they're not really safe there. So their only safe patches are the little wild places we've left, because our gardens aren't really safe either. They're kept tidy and neat, and there isn't really any space for refuge or sanctuary. And they're filled with non-native plants, which break the web of life. They're incredibly important for everything to survive, including us. And instead of acknowledging that reality, we, you know, just the way things have happened, we've kind of been walking away from nature for many, 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 many generations. And so we keep kind of cutting ourselves off from the earth beneath our feet, and as a result we're causing her health to decline. And you know, we're just pure mirror images of the health of the earth beneath our feet. So you can look around to see the health of human race and every other species that we share the planet with is declining too. So I decided to set up a movement from that day's experience called We Are the Ark. And I called it that because I want all of us to share it, to own it. And it starts, ARC stands for Acts of Restorative Kindness to the Earth. So it's a really simple idea. And all I do is I ask people to give at least half of any land they have under their care. And if they can't do that, you know, as much as they can manage, to give it back to nature, to ARC it, which is kind of like rewilding, except that it's quite managed because there's a broken ecosystem. So we have to step in and carry out different ecosystem services, you know, because we can't really have wolves or deer or whatever in a suburban garden or on a balcony or whatever it is you're dealing with.
You know? And we know a very well-known politician got an awful lot of bother when he mentioned bringing wolves back in. So we won't go down that road. But there is, I think, a line in the understanding between doing what you're doing, and then there might be others who would say, oh, well, that land, that's just been left derelict. And it's not being minded. Like, surely would they not take pride in it and do something with it, you know? So I'm wondering, how do you broach that? Like, is there a difference between doing what you're doing and neglecting the land?
Okay. Well, it has a wide range of things. Number one, it should have a sign saying this is an ARC. And the website underneath so that people understand, they can reference it and see what's going on there. And that instantly gives credence to it and stops people feeling embarrassed or worried what their neighbours will think. So that's really powerful. And then the other side of it is that because we don't have the full kind of cohort of creatures in the web of life existing in our small little patches, that we have to step in and become the wolf, become the deer, become, you know, the badger, become the, you know, all the missing creatures. So we have to carry out their services. So what that means in reality is that you can have your paths, you can have your areas for you, for yourself, but to leave a lot of it for them, the creatures that are really, really stressed, that we're completely and hopelessly dependent upon for our own survival, which is kind of mind-bogglingly crazy. But if you imagine that all those creatures were present in a working ecosystem, you would have mature woodland, you would have you know, scrubby woodland, edge of woodland kind of habitats, you'd have meadows, you'd have thickets of brambles and things like that, you'd have mown or grazed areas, which we call our lawns, and then you'd have, you know, bare earth, you'd have dead wood, you'd have rocky outcrops, you'd have all these different habitats, right? So what we say to people is try and create as many different layers of those habitats as you can manage.
Okay.
So you'd have an air of, if you only have a tiny space, you may only have enough room for a meadow, maybe a hedgerow, which would be, you know, your thorny thicket, you know, a mown path through the hedgerow. So there's a few different layers there. And all the life happens in the edges between those layers. So if you have a path that's mown, you'll find all the blackbirds and things poking around there. They can't poke around in the meadow. But if you don't have meadow, you won't have habitat for a vast amount of creatures. And then, you know, the hedgerow will give you, you know, all sorts of nesting and foraging sites as well. So in a larger space, you would have woodland, then you'd have thicket, like shrubby thicket, like willow, like scrubby willows and blackthorns and hawthorns and things like that. And then you'd be coming down to your meadows. So it's layering. But within that, you can create your spaces. And you can use your paths and your spaces to create those layers. So like one thing that we would often say is, you know, that leave the leaves alone, leave them where they lie. You know, stop using chemicals. There's no chemicals at all allowed in an ARC because they cause many more problems than they solve. And You just have to kind of allow the seed bank to emerge as much as possible, because one thing people are told is to plant loads of pollinator friendly plants.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the way to go. You don't need to spend any money to build an ark. You know, it's just a little bit of time and effort. You don't have the energy, even just allowing it to rest is better than planting lots of things that have been grown in carbon heavy environments that are non-native, that yes, the pollinators are going to be instantly attracted to in a kind of a, you know, a fast food way. But as a result of the pollinators being attracted to the large showy flowers, they ignore the small native plants. Things like, you know, Scarlet Pimpernel, in things that you wouldn't necessarily notice, but they don't get pollinated. So they start to retreat from the space. And as a result, those insects that we're trying to support, who have developed really important and intricate relationships with the native plants in order to create a new generation of their own species, they don't have anywhere for their larvae to survive, because their larvae have evolved to only eat, say, one species of plant, maybe mm-hmm. two. And if you put in non-native plants to feed these particular insects, that's great and everything, but you're very short-term thinking. And it's not our fault. It's because we've been told that this is the thing to do.
And we go into garden centres and we see, and it is great to see, you know, Irish grown plants like they, and a lot of them nowadays will have specific sections. They'll say Irish grown plants and it's all lovely branding and that's lovely, but it can be hard to decipher whether or not that means they're actually native to the island. So like your idea is just leaving things be. And the elephant in the room, does that mean if we were to do that in our gardens that we would end up having unwanted house guests?
Oh, no.
Because I think that's a fear a lot of people have, that if they turn their garden into a bit of a meadow, that all of a sudden we're going to have mice.
Well, I have, what I do is I keep the mown area around the house, mm-hmm. you know, and then you don't have a problem. You know,
okay.
No. And then the thing about when I say leave everything alone, there's 5,000 weed seeds in, or what we call weed seeds, in every square foot of soil if it's undamaged. And they're the things we really want to encourage, because they have evolved locally alongside their insect partners. And sometimes the insect's tongues will be too long or too short or something from plants we bring in further away. But sometimes there isn't that much in the seed bank, or there isn't much diversity there, or whatever it is. So we do say, you know, bring in as many native plant diversity layers that you can, and bring in as many different native plants as you can, and source them locally if you can, as locally as possible. Within 10 miles is the recommended distance. But if you can't get them, then just go a little further afield and try and develop as many different layers as possible. So we have a great group called We Are the Ark on Facebook, and in that group, people, you know, they can find people that are near them in the world, and then they can start to share plants and stuff, which is really cool. And because the more diversity you have, the more life you're supporting. And what I mean by diversity, I mean the more different types of native plants you have. But the most important and first step is to allow the earth herself to decide what she wants to grow there. Now, in many parts of the world, we've done so much damage that doesn't work anymore. Like in America or Canada, it's just rife with non-native invasive plants in the seed bank. And so it's our job to step in and pull them out, basically. And in our small patches, that's very easy to do without chemicals, if you can manage it, you know. And you just keep at it and keep at it and keep those things covered. You know, just don't give up. They will eventually give up, you know. It just might take a long time. But it has to be done, because the native plants are basically the foundation stone of any ecosystem. And if we don't allow them to recover, then nothing will recover.
And Mary, if you know, listening to you tonight is maybe getting people thinking, because I know the autumn tends to be a busy time for gardeners where they're doing some work for the following year. And maybe through listening to you, they're thinking, well, maybe I might try to do things a little bit differently this time around. I know you mentioned the website and the Facebook group. Do you have any pointers as to, you know, where should we go on those to find out information to get started?
Where should you go on
say on your website or that, or, you know, where, because I think people, it's all very well and good, and radio is a beautiful medium, but sometimes we need to read a little bit before we know what to do.
I hear you. Okay, so on the website there's it's weareattheark.org, and it's ARK, Acts of Restorative Kindness to the Earth is what it stands for. And there's how to build an ark. There's a page for home gardens, there's a page for public spaces, a page for schools, there's a page for farmers even, you know, it's just to try and see if there's anything you can do to help. But the basic stuff is stop using chemicals, try and grow your own food as much as you can, because industrial farming is really, industrial farming, fishing and forestry is killing everything on the planet. And it's very difficult to change those systems. But if you step outside the system, and enough of us do that, it'll eventually change, because it has to. We ask people to grow their own food if they can. If they've lots of land and they've friends who don't have any land, then share the land for them to grow some food. And it creates communities around growing food, which is lovely. If you have an older person in your community that has a garden and can't manage it, and you don't have any land, then it's a really good way to create communities with older people, is to ask them, would they be willing to let you work with their land to create an ark, to grow food in return for company, for the produce from the garden, to share in that, and to for them to sit and watch all the creatures that will turn up almost instantly to enjoy, to share their home, not their home, but their garden, share their hearts, really, you know, because that's the wonderful thing that happens, is that when all these amazing creatures start to turn up again, like dragonflies, or if you have a water feature, or, you know, all the little world, wonderful world of birds that comes back. Everything that turns up, you know, if you have a larger space, you're going to have hedgehogs, you might have bats, you might have foxes. I mean, it's just amazing how quickly, it's almost like they know overnight that there's a sanctuary here and it's a safe space. And you get to share in their world by watching them and going, my goodness, these are just amazing. And how do they survive out there when there's hardly any food left for them, you know, our safety. But when you do that, your heart kind of expands to include all of those creatures. And it really enriches your life. And it also gives you hope that this world can recover from the damage we've done to it. Because that's the thing that kills most of us who know what's wrong, is that we've done this, but how are we going to fix it? But if you have land and you actually give it back to her and you restore its health as much as you can, it actually gives you hope. And so you go out into the world and you kind of think, okay, it's tough going out here, but we can fix this pretty quickly, you know, we can fix this pretty quickly. And we can start by creating a patchwork quilt of hope like this. And then every time you go out into your neighborhood, you're going to look at your neighbor's garden. So you're going to look at those green spaces that the council has kept neat and tidy, because that's the traditional thing to do. And you look at them and you go, my goodness, they're such lost opportunities for life to exist, you know? And so, it's a very simple thing, but it has potential to be very powerful in many ways.
Well, Mary Reynolds, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Go Green here this evening, and for bringing some hope into the conversation, because I think that is very much needed at this point in time. And the website again is weareattheark.org.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and thanks for joining us on the show tonight. We will be back after the break.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far this evening. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about the return of the common crane to Ireland and the success story that we have right here at home in the Midlands. So please do stay tuned. Well, how did you get on with the weather over the weekend? Was it too hot? Was it a bit too uncomfortable? Does it concern you? I'm not too accustomed to the heat anymore. And I find it challenging, I have to admit. As much as I like to see the sun, physically I find it draining. And I have to admit, it does concern me. It really does. But look, we have some positive news in relation to the return of the common crane to Ireland. So please do stay tuned for that. And, you know, we hope that all of those affected by the wildfires across Europe over the past week or so are recovering well and are that their homes are you know, rebuildable. And that we perhaps start taking action so that we don't see things like this again. But maybe that's too big an ask. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you have been enjoying our show so far this evening. Well, we are very much staying with environmental matters, as always, and biodiversity once again this evening. And we're joined now by Mark McCarry, who is the ecology manager at Aboard Nemona. Mark, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
No problem. Thank you, Ashley.
Now, Mark, people in the Midlands will be very familiar with the work that's been going on in the past number of years to reintroduce native species to the boglands of the Midlands and the work that's been going on to re-wet some of the bogs in the area. But you recently had some rather exciting news. Can you tell me what's been happening?
Yeah, well, Ashley, this is really exciting. And what we're talking about is the appearance of the common crane back in our Midlands landscape again. And the common crane is a bird that went extinct as a breeding bird in Ireland. It hasn't bred in Ireland for 300 years. This bird, the common crane, it looks somewhat like a hern, but it's much bigger. So it stands nearly between 1.5 to 2 metres high. So it's a very tall bird, much taller than anything we would see in our landscape. And what was really surprising to us was 2 years ago, we were notified that a pair of common crane had appeared in one of our bogs in the Midlands, you know, that have been re-wetting. And, you know, occasionally you will get these birds in the wintertime when they're migrating. These birds generally migrate from Europe to the north of Africa and the Mediterranean area and so on. But the fact that they were here in the breeding period was really interesting. So when we went to check, we realized that they had built a nest. And then when they had left the nest, and later on that year we went to check the nest, we found the remains of some eggs. So that indicated they had obviously hatched eggs. Now, we didn't know, we reckoned that those eggs had failed. So the following year, the birds came back again. And this year we were ready for them, and we were watching. And we were able to record the appearance of two chicks. And so that was really exciting because it was the first evidence of chicks being born in Ireland again over 300 years. And then, sure, this year the birds have come back again, and we're really excited and happy to announce that there's two more chicks have appeared again this year.
Now, Mark, so we get the significance of this, Mark, how many years has it been since we had the common crane breeding in Ireland?
It's estimated over 300 years since they were breeding in Ireland. And they, you know, these are birds of wetlands. And in the past, they were probably hunted for food and also kept as pets that were actually important for Irish folklore and mythology at the time. So really interesting species.
And like, I'm not, I have a member of my extended family, my godfather actually is a very big into bird watching, but I have to admit I'm completely ignorant really when it comes to it. I love the sound of birds in the in my garden and admiring them, all right, but my knowledge of the species, like many people, would be very limited. So I'm kind of curious, if they haven't been breeding in Ireland for about 300 years, we think, what's attracted them back? What has changed?
What has changed is that the population in Europe is expanding its range. So like, if we look at Britain, this species went extinct in Britain as well. Now it has come back. So it had came, it had some birds came back naturally, and some also some birds were reintroduced into Britain. And so the number of breeding pairs is growing in Britain. So like, it's thought that, again, as the population is expanding and its range is expanding, you know, some birds are going a bit further afield. They're overflying in Ireland, and they've landed in some of our wetlands and said, "Okay, we're going to you know, set up house here and attempt breeding."
It's absolutely fascinating. And like, do you think now that? Now, I know you're not announcing publicly the location of the cranes or their chicks, just for their own safety, which is totally understandable, because in case people get too, you know, excited about it. But is this connected then to the re-wetting of the bogs?
For me, it is, because it's a really good indicator that, like, if the bogs are re-wetted, they attract wildlife like the common crane. And we can talk about the common crane, but we can also talk about lots of other species, wetland species, that would have been under pressure in our wider landscape, as, you know, so many wetlands have been lost, you know, due to reclamation and changes in land use and so on. But now, as these cutaway bogs are being re-wetted, these new habitats are developing, and they're attracting in species like this. And we could also talk about, you know, black-headed gull, or lapwing, or redshank. These are all wetland birds that, you know, unfortunately have significant reductions in populations, you know, in the past few years in Ireland, but are finding, you know, space on these re-wetted sites. So it just, it really shows that re-wetting these cutaway peatlands can be really, really good for biodiversity. And like, obviously, Bord na Mona has stopped peat extraction now. We stopped, you know, 2 years ago. We're in this process of a really significant rehabilitation project called the Peatland Climate Action Scheme. And what that is doing is that it is re-wetting bogs, across Offaly and across other counties. And these bogs, in time, as they develop habitats and as they get wet, will be able to provide habitat to species, hopefully, like common crane. And, you know, what we would like to see is, obviously we can't expect this one pair of common crane to re-establish a population in Ireland. And hopefully we will see more birds appearing in time as these habitats develop. And this is what we've actually seen this year. A third bird has turned up at another one of our re-wetted bogs, and unfortunately it's on its own. But again, it's thought by my colleagues that this could be an Irish bred chick. So again, this is just really exciting, and just really shows the value of these sites for biodiversity.
Now, talk to me, Mark, about the process of re-wetting a bog. Like, I assume it's not just as simple as, you know, getting a tanker and just pumping water into the area.
Well, no, you know, probably not as simple as that. But you're really on the right track. At a high level, it's really trying to bring water levels back to the surface of the peat, and generally, what that means, it means drain blocking. And we have found this has been very effective in Bord na Mona. You know, where you block drains, you can bring the water levels close to the surface of the peat. get the surface nice and soggy again. And then, you know, through natural colonization, the various peatland species and wetland species will then recolonize and develop these new habitats. And, you know, particularly around Borah, where I am now in the Loughborough Discovery Park, you know, many of these bogs have, you know, obviously been in peat extraction for so long, the majority of peat has been cut away. And that means the environment has changed radically. So we don't really talk about bog restoration in this context when the environment has changed, but we talk about rehabilitation. So when we re-wet peat, like say in and around Borah, we're not going to be restoring raised bog, but we are going to see the development of these other habitats, fen habitats and reed beds and wet woodland and so on.
I find it really interesting because obviously, like, you know, growing up in the Midlands and attending school here, there would have been quite a lot of focus on how bogs are formed and that whole process of, you know, a foliage and all of that becoming detritus and everything rotting for years upon years and how slow a process it is. That I suppose this, the fact that, you know, we've only been working at rewetting some areas for the last, you know, couple of years, really, the fact that you're getting the common crane to return in what seems like a short period of time, it must be quite heartening for you and your colleagues.
Yes, it is. Like, and for me as an ecologist, it's just every day I go out the bog, I see something new and something exciting and something that I mightn't have seen before, you know, new species appearing, you know, where I wouldn't have seen it before. And so on. And we also have to remember that this rewetting these peatlands, it's also really important for climate action because peatlands are such a great store for carbon, and you know, like really, like a much better store for carbon. Like if we look at a global context, even compared to say, our rainforests, you know, that we might see in Africa or Brazil, and so on. So, like, if these peatlands are in good condition, and you know they have lots of plants and mosses that will suck in the carbon, they're carbon sinks. But you know, unfortunately, because of you know all this activity, you know the peat extraction that you know Borden Mona would have used this peat for energy and for growing media and so on, it means that it's going to take some time to develop those conditions again. But what we've actually seen in terms of some of the research on some of our bogs in the past few years, like even where we have blocked drains on bogs where they were drained but not restored, we've seen that bog switching from a source for carbon dioxide to a sink for carbon dioxide just within 8 years. And that just reflects the bog has got wetter as the water level got to the surface of the peat. And it's stimulating the growth of sphagnum moss, which is changing this greenhouse gas flux that's showing that switch between a source to a sink. So, like particularly on these other bogs where the majority of peat is cut away, it's going to take much longer for those to switch to carbon sinks. But what we can do if we get these soggy conditions again, we can lock the remaining carbon into the ground. And like in time, you know, we can, once we get peat forming conditions again, you know, and as you describe it, all, you know, that plant matter rotting, that detritus developing and, you know, the formation of peat again, then we'll start to see it, developing as a carbon sink as well. So a lot of this work, you know, that Borden Mona is doing now, particularly in relation to the Peat and Climate Action Scheme, you know, like it's really important on a national context for climate action and for biodiversity and for a lot of other ecosystem services. And it's also important, you know, in the context of our landscape. You know, we're going to see the landscape improving for local communities as well.
Well, Mark McCarry from Borden Mona, ecology manager there in Borah, thank you so much for bringing us some positive news in relation to the environment in a week that we've had forest fires raging in parts of Europe that haven't seen fires in decades. It's it's been quite frightening. So to hear that, you know, some of our efforts here at home are actually doing good for the environment, it is quite heartening altogether. So thank you very much for your time this evening, Mark.
Thank you, Ashley.
We will be back after the break. It's Midlands 103 and it's Let's Go Green here on the station this evening. I'm your host, Ashling O'Rourke, and I hope you have been enjoying the show this evening. Well, we are short on time, so I'm going to make this quick. First things first, I want to say thank you for getting in touch with me over the past number of weeks. I've gotten some lovely emails and I do look forward to getting more. So please do get in contact with me on letsgogreen@midlands103.com. You can also look up the show on the Midlands103.com website. And in some lovely news, we are now a podcast in our own right. So if maybe tuning in on a Monday at 7 p.m. doesn't work for you every week, well, simply go into the Midlands 103 app and click on podcasts. You can also look us up on your Apple Podcast app and Google Podcasts. So if you go into the Google Podcast app, for example, you can search for Let's Go Green with Ashling O'Rourke and all our episodes will be there for you. And in the not too distant future, I hope, the people upstairs are working on it. We're going to be on Spotify as well. So we will be at an app convenient to you in the not too distant future. So we're still on air, of course. You know, it is. This is our home. But this is a more convenient way to help you listen when you are out and about if you happen to miss us on a Monday night. And it's lovely to see us branching out into the podcast arena. Well, as I said, I hope you have been enjoying the show. Please do feel free to get in contact with me through midlands103.com. I want to hear what you want me to talk about, you know. And one of the things that people have been asking questions about is electric cars. So our next episode next week is going to be entirely devoted to electric cars. What you need to know, how you go about applying for grants, what kind of maintenance is involved, all that jazz. So please do stay tuned if you are considering changing, I was about to say upgrading your motor, but if you're considering, given the cost of diesel and petrol at the moment, if you think maybe running an electric car might be easier for you to manage in the longer term, or you want to do your bit for the environment and switch over, this is going to be an interesting show for you. So please do come back to us next Monday evening at 7 p.m. Have a great week and I'll be back same time next week here on Midlands 103.